This is also how the airlines get you. And this is like the expert advice from Brandon, the mentorship, if you will.
The aviation mentorship.
Aviation, yes. I would say if you are going to buy economy ticket, you should price out all the ancillary things that they're going to charge you for. Like, are you checking a bag? Are there baggage fees for you not checking a bag? Like, are you bringing a carry-on? Do they charge for that? Are you bringing a backpack? Do they charge for that?
Does your kind of carry-on fit in their specific space? Yeah,
they might have
what might fit in Delta will not fit in Ryanair.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. All right, Carson, we are back for part two.
I blanked on that word too.
Part. There we go.
All right.
Because we stand apart from our competition. And that brings in the next section, what we're going to talk about, the influence of competition. So competitive pricing, airlines keep an eye on their competitors. If an airline lowers its prices, they may follow suit. But I've also noticed as soon as they get into these like pricing wars of going down, they end up being Spirit Airlines and going bankrupt. So yeah. I'm pretty sure it's illegal to like collude with the other airlines to put pricing up.
It is.
But I'm sure it is. Yeah.
I'll just tell you it is.
It is. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure that they probably all have like a handshake agreement. Like, hey, don't go X percent below that. Their CEOs have to talk to each other. You know, they're colluding.
They have to. I mean, there's a couple oil companies that just got in trouble for doing the same thing with keeping oil prices high.
Yeah,
of course. They want to make money. And they all just, you know, they had some agreement and then someone found out and blew the whistle on it. So I think whistleblowing's happen a lot in the aviation industry, like all that Boeing stuff.
Well, if it's Boeing, ain't going. Used to be the opposite of that.
It did.
Now Boeing.
If
it's Boeing, I'm not going, especially on a spaceship. I get stuck somewhere for 4 or 5 months.
I mean, 2024 just kind of sucked for
them. Yeah, I think the past 10 years have sucked for them.
All that too. I think ever since
737 MAX.
Well, that too. I think ever since the ownership changed, it's been kind of downhill.
Ownership changed? You mean the CEO changed?
No, Boeing got bought by Douglas.
I think they just merged.
Whatever it was. There's a Boeing documentary, like the downfall of Boeing. And it was all about the 737 MAX.
I watched it while flying in a 737 MAX.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So that was spooky stuff. Like planes just falling out of the air pretty much for a couple months. You know, no biggie.
Yeah. That's what jack screws are for.
What did you say?
The jack screw is what screwed that up.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
All right.
All right. So what are some additional factors, Carson, that changes this pricing? And then let's get on to the fun stuff because I'm tired of going over this.
Okay. So the route popularity, obviously, if you're going to like Los Angeles, New York, any big city, those are typically going to be higher prices. You're paying for the convenience of getting straight there. Less traveled routes may be cheaper. And also depends on what airport you're flying out of. Some airports are just more expensive to fly out of than others. You're paying for convenience and it can get confusing, right? If you're flying out of LAX, sometimes that is going to be a cheaper flight. And if you're flying out of John Wayne, sometimes that's a cheaper flight. It depends on where you're going. And that route really just comes into play, right? If you're going to big cities from a big city, that flight is probably going to be a little cheaper because that's when they fly every day, all day.
Yeah. And the time of day thing, this one's big for me. And Southwest is like the king or queen of doing this, by the way. I look at their website and I'm like, oh, it would be fun to leave Vegas at like, I don't know, 2 p.m. and get back home at 3, right?
Yeah,
that really sounds nice like time. Good. You get to sleep in a little bit. No. If you want the cheap flight, you got to leave at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. And if you want the $800 flight, you leave at 2 or 3 p.m. on a Sunday. And then as it gets later on at night, the prices go cheaper. I noticed that recently.
I've never noticed that because I always just pick the cheapest one, which ends up being a terrible time.
And yeah. Like, I don't want to fly in that terrible time.
No, but then if you want to pay, like, yeah, pay like an extra grand depending on where you're going.
Yeah, I don't want to do that either. So I want something in between. But what's really funny is they outprice themselves from companies like JSX. And JSX does the same pricing model, by the way. The most popular ones are in the middle.
Sure.
But if I have to pay that price with Southwest anyways, I'd rather go pay it with JSX and get first class seats on the entire flight.
What kind of planes does JSX fly?
CRJs. With 30 seats in them.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was like, I hate CRJs, but I don't want to offend you because you really like JSX. But 30 seats. Oh, dude, that's nice.
Yeah.
You get like a private jet experience almost.
Almost.
Yeah. And what else does JSX do? Do they skip the lines or?
Yeah. You don't have to go through TSA.
Well, I already have pre-check.
So. No. You can show up 10 minutes before your flight.
Oh.
And like walk through there. They so scan going- for guns or something. I don't know. And they take your laptop out. You have to take your laptop out.
Hmm.
But that's the only thing. Take your laptop out and they like swipe it and walk through.
Oh, that's nice.
10 minutes.
Oh, that's real nice. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that one in mind now.
Like check your bag 10 minutes before they just walk it to the plane.
Dude.
It's a private experience.
That's really cool. Okay.
No, the best part is literally no TSA.
Yeah. TSA is a nightmare to go through. We got stuck in South Carolina trying to go through the TSA line for pre-check. There was a line. It was like 30 minutes to get to the front of that.
When I was in Miami, it was over 30 minutes for me to get through pre-check. Now, Miami's airport sucks, but
I was flying out of Charlotte. That was pretty bad, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I can imagine. Anyway, the booking channel as well. Sorry, we're getting back to the topic. That was confusing for you guys. The booking channel that you go through, whether it's like Expedia, like we were talking about in the last episode, going through Expedia or going through the airline directly, that can also have an impact. And Brandon, I think, gave us the hack of triple points. That's pretty creative.
I love my triple points.
I bet you do. So that saves a lot.
Nice. Next thing, I think this is going to get a little more interesting, actually, at least for me.
Because, you talk about it.
Revenue management systems. So airlines use sophisticated revenue management systems to take data analytics to forecast demand, track booking patterns, optimize ticket prices. These systems help the airlines adjust prices dynamically to maximize revenue based on historical data, current booking trends, and external factors like weather and geopolitical events. So I bet you if you want to go to Washington, D.C. today, probably a bit expensive. By the way, we're recording this on election day. So
it's
election day, yes.
Oh, so I guess if Civil War happens, we might be posting this episode next week or
no, it's still getting posted.
Oh, okay. Still getting posted. Yeah, it doesn't affect Mark, I guess. That's right.
Affect Mark. Mark is outside of the country. So this is tiered and data-driven approach to ticket pricing. Really helps the airlines balance the affordability and of course the profitability, ensuring that each seat contributes optimally to the revenue. So airline profitability varies by class, but in general, the classes contribute most to an airline's profitability are
business class, obviously.
Obviously.
Right.
Why is it the primary revenue driver?
So business class is often the most profitable section on the plane. Fewer passengers actually travel it compared to economy, right? There's just less business seats than economy ones, but they usually pay several times. I've seen it a fraction, so it's like 50% more, going up to like 300% more. It depends on the route, the kind of plane. If you're going internationally or it's a domestic flight, but this premium pricing covers the additional costs, the amenities and space that they lose out on and the services that they provide while yielding a pretty substantial profit margin. I mean, you're paying for, you know, you take up two spaces of economy seats and you're paying three times the price. Makes sense for the airline.
Absolutely.
Right.
Makes sense for the person in it as well.
Exactly. Like you for the corporate travel part, a lot of business travelers are prioritizing the comfort and convenience, and for someone like Brandon, the company is willing to pay for it, right?
Usually, or me, I'm willing to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the comfort and convenience per se. It's the, I get on the airplane first. I can get some work done while everybody else is boarding. I'm not having to sit there and wait for my number to be called and having to wait outside the gate. So I can do that. I can get started on my laptop stuff there. And then I'm off first. So I can just head out. I can go take phone calls. I can get things done that I couldn't get done if I'm just sitting in the back of the airplane for another 20 minutes while everybody's getting off board. And then on top of that, I have more room for my laptop. I get more work done on an airplane than I do in my own office because I'm having constant people calling me, constant people emailing me, constant people slacking me. I've got to do podcast recordings like this. Like there's reasons why that makes a lot more sense. So I end up getting almost to inbox zero usually. Or I get big tasks done, like I have to read these super long reports or white papers that people post.
And 50 to 100 pages of just reading.
Of like, really, you need to have your mind there. And
that's the good part about the plane Wi-Fi is it's good enough for you to do that, but not good enough for the calls to come in, all the extra stuff to happen. So you're not getting those outside
distractions. Sometimes the Wi-Fi doesn't even work. Like when I was from Dallas to Vegas last week, Wi-Fi didn't work. So
you actually got to rest for once?
I read a book.
Oh, you read a book? Dude, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But the corporate travel is what makes it the business class, right? Businesses are paying for it typically, or a business individual, and then that ends up making it business class, right?
Absolutely. And then there's also first class, and there's just high margins, low volume.
Just crazy prices.
Yeah, but you know, you get the prestige, like, oh, I'm flying first class.
Yeah, I don't think my ego is high enough, and my wallet's too small to be actually to be there yet, but one day. One day.
I don't know if I would ever. I mean,
I just want to splurge one time. It's an experience. So I guess you're right. It is the first class.
It's an experience, I guess. I actually want to go on a first class flight to like.
I want one of those Emirates suites, dude.
Emirates, because I want to go. They've got like a bar up there you can go like walk up to. I just think that experience of being on an airplane, like walking up to people and like commingling in like a section.
Yeah, instead of being in your seat, seatbelted in, just trying to get through the flight. I'm on the flight, not trying to get through the flight.
Yeah, I think that would be more enjoyable experience, to be completely honest. So
yeah, I think that's like the pinnacle of what you're going to experience in aviation.
Yeah. And then premium economy is a growing profit center for a multitude of reasons. And I've actually noticed this over the past several years. There's more and more seats given to premium economy. And to be honest, I don't think premium economy, there's any difference between it and economy, at least to me.
I notice it. That's the one I fly because I don't want to sit in economy, but just what do won't they pay for you? Business.
Like another 2 inches or something?
Yeah, it's a couple extra inches, and inches matter when you're stuck in a space like this.
Can't see Carson's legs, but he's like,
I'm stuck like this. That's terrible. So I'd rather be able to stretch out just a little bit more. And usually they have just, better amenities. The seat's more comfortable. It's a thicker seat. It's not like a whole cushioned, like I'm sitting in the cockpit, but the seats are much better. So it's just not the same price as business, and it's not the same crappy quality as economy.
Exactly. And then
so it's premium economy.
And then in economy class, obviously they've got a lot of high volume, but lower margins. They need to, the masses, that's what most people will fly. And I've flown economy for most of my life, and it got me to where I was going. And
you're getting through the flight. You're there for a purpose to get to your destination.
Yep. And I actually switched. When I used to fly economy, I flew window seat. Now?
I'm an aisle person now.
Now I'm an aisle person.
I used to be window too.
I used to be window.
Now then I got the window of the front seat of the plane enough times. Get my pilot license. Then I was like, okay, the view out that side is not nearly as good as the one going forward. So I might as well get the extra comfort of the aisle where I can at least manspread until the cart comes through.
Well, that's funny. But I actually picked the window seat in economy for a different reason. And that is because you can lay your head against it and fall asleep. That was my primary factor.
I was just leaning on the stranger next to me. So that's not that big of a deal.
I've had lots of strangers sleep on me.
Have you?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what, no, I usually fly with Maddie. So she's usually in on me and just kind of create like a,
yes,
little pyramid and
a huddle.
Yeah. A huddle. And just knock out.
Absolutely. But this is also how the airlines get you. So you should really, and this is like the expert advice from Brandon, the mentorship, if you will.
Of aviation mentors.
Of aviation, yes. I would say if you are going to buy economy ticket, you should price out all the ancillary things that they're going to charge you for. Like, are you checking a bag? Are there baggage fees for you not checking a bag? Like, are you bringing a carry-on? Do they charge for that? Are you bringing a backpack? Do they charge for that?
Does your kind of carry-on fit in their specific space? Yeah,
they might have
what a smaller... might fit in Delta will not fit in Ryanair.
It will not. I love Ryanair, by the way. I've never flown them before, and I don't think I ever
I love their social media.
They're
so funny, dude.
They like make fun of the passengers.
Oh, yeah. Like they just take like such a nonchalant, like guerrilla marketing approach, and it's fantastic. Like if I was going to be in marketing, I would love to work for a company like that, where I can just have free reign to just be funny and like, actually connect with people and be real instead of so corporate, like stick up your, So, but the ancillary stuff is that's where they get you every single time.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they will charge you for sitting in an aisle seat. Not like if you don't want to sit in the middle seat, they will charge you for that.
Yep.
So you have to check these things because there's certain things that you may never want to give up. Like you want to bring a carry-on and a backpack.
Yeah. And like, it's like picking a plane. It's like, what's your mission? Like, what are you willing to pay for or not willing to pay for? What do you care about? Because I don't check bags all the time. So baggage fees don't really apply to me.
I check bags every time.
I have a nice weekend bag that will fit everything.
I like to bring like my proper size deodorant, proper size hair products. I want to bring all that stuff with me.
Well, I try and pack light and simple, but I usually end up having 8 pairs of underwear. I'm like, what if this is becomes a long trip? And like, what if
Taco Bell arrives?
Exactly. On the plane of all things. That'd be terrible.
Okay. I digress. But yeah, so you should really look at all those add-ons, especially the economy airlines. Like, I know we keep on making fun of Spirit, but Spirit or Frontier or Ryanair or these smaller airlines, they charge literally for everything. And typically, if you like add up the things that are just, I have to pay for this, then you should probably just fly a different airline. It's going to be a better experience. You don't have to get nickel and dimed for everything.
Or they have packages. Like United has packages of, you know, I want these three things, like express boarding and a bag and, you know, in-flight whatever snacks or Wi-Fi. It'll bundle it together and you can pick the bundle that applies to you, and that's how they get you again. It's like, well, we'll add all these things. We'll take $10 off what you would be paying for all of them.
Yep, exactly. And they get you good. So be careful with that. I don't really see that as much on my side. It's normally try to be all inclusive as much as possible. So that is a benefit if you do fly business class and sometimes premium economy. But if you are flying economy, beware of all these things. Sometimes they equate to more money than it would have been if you just ordered business.
Or just flew a different airline or had a different kind of ticket, like Brandon said.
All of the things. You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brand.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show. So price it out. There's good ways to do it. You can go through a third party like Expedia, through the website directly. I like Google Flights. You know, it usually gets me the answers I want by comparing all the airlines. Then you could also search for all the airports around an area. So that's a big one for me. Like you can look up
Google Flights, does that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they can do that.
Yeah, that's cool. It can show you all the Los Angeles airports. So yeah, it pulls up LAX, John Wayne, Long Beach, Ontario. So it has all four of them and it'll show you all the prices, all the times. So I like Google Flights. Makes it easy.
Yeah, I know you can type in QLA and that shows all of them, but sometimes they like remove certain ones. Like over the years, they've added and removed and it has Burbank on there. I'm like, I don't want any of that. It's too far, Burbank.
Yeah, Burbank is like private.
I mean, it's not. It's a big place.
I know, but like when I think of Burbank, like I'm not going to like pick Burbank out of any airport to fly into.
Because it's in the valley. The valley's so far from Orange County or
where we actually need to go.
Yeah, it's just too far. And then with traffic, you're talking 3-4 hours to get there.
Yeah, I'll pay extra to fly out of Ontario.
Ontario's a lot. It's gotten cheaper over the years because they're no longer under control of, I think it's LAQUA. That's the LAX basically controlled Ontario and basically made all their flights more expensive by controlling the routes that were allowed in there.
I didn't know that.
And they got out of that just a few years ago.
Well, I guess the politics of airlines and aviation, like
politics about owning the airlines own their desk. And you walk into airline or you walk into to airports and you see all these desks that aren't used, right?
Yeah.
The ticket counters and stuff. Yeah, they're not used because the airline wants them to not be used by other people, even if they don't need them. So they'll pay for that space.
So like when they pay for like part of a terminal, right? Like a wing of a terminal and you're like, okay, gates D13 through 50 are American.
I would say the gates are still going to be used by whomever.
But I mean like those desks in front of them.
They're specifically for those airlines. Wow. And then outside of that at the ticket counter is what I was referring to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why there's not one little airline everywhere. And it's because those ticket areas are at a premium.
Huh.
Big premium.
Wow.
Yep. Let's get a little summary going on this and let's wrap it up. Carson, what do you think?
Yeah, sounds good to me. So all in all, airlines are going to get all their money from you. That's kind of what I got out of it. And the way that you pay and the seat you pick is going to have a huge impact on what you pay and what the airlines make, right? Obviously, the better the seat, the more the airlines make. But the other things like baggage fees, seat selection, in-flight meals, add-ons. I mean, just in 2018 alone, the global airline ancillary revenue, it was estimated to be around $92.9 billion. And that's just the stuff they made from not ticket sales. That just means not ticket sales.
And that's annual.
That's just add-ons.
You want to hear a crazy statistic?
What?
Annually, the flight training industry, because we have to look into this for Stratus Financial. Annually, around the globe, it's estimated to be between $5 and $7 billion on flight training alone. And that is, as far as I know, just the like learning how to fly. It's not all of the other benefits.
Like renting planes to time build and all that?
No, it includes all that stuff. It's not including like FAA flight safety, like the big simulator stuff that the airlines pay for. I mean, that's a whole different industry as well.
Yeah, I mean, we got to do another episode on what airlines pay for.
Oh, they pay for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Especially for their pilots, especially first-year pilots. I think that would be fantastic because first-year pilots make less than second-year pilots, and it's for a reason. You got to pay for that type rating of yours.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that they have to pay for. Type rating, the flights to and from training, I mean, housing at training, all the check line instructors. Yeah. We'll talk all about it. Let's do that next week or the week after.
And the fact that they've got to do, sometimes they have to do their flights in the simulator at like 3 a.m.
They do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you would know that, wouldn't you?
When I was doing my ATP training,
was it a CTP schedule? Course,
I didn't get a terrible one. I got like a 5:30 in the morning, and I got, I think, a 9 p.m. at night, something like that. It wasn't horrible, but there were other guys that got like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m.
I mean, it makes sense. They're paying so much for that simulator. I don't know how much the simulator must cost.
$30 million.
Okay, that's how much it costs. $30 million for one simulator?
Correct. Or more.
Okay, so it makes total sense. Keep that thing running as much as they can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, get their money's worth. Anyway.
All right. So besides the ancillary revenues, there's the frequent flyer programs, which I am a huge, huge fan. I highly suggest that whenever you apply or you go buy a ticket for an airline, just sign up for the frequent flyers program. It doesn't matter. Just apply for it because all you have to do is it gives you a number. In my iPhone, I've got a little notes section in there and I save every single one of my frequent flyer names. And then after you input them enough into Expedia for me, or whatever you use, it'll automatically save them typically. Yep. And as far as I know, none of them expire. The points or miles stay forever.
They do.
So I would just do it and eventually you'll have enough for a free flight.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you go somewhere far or paying a lot for a ticket, sometimes they can do that. And you can also buy a miles, which that's a whole different thing. But you can do this on some airlines and pay an extra couple bucks to double the miles. Or triple the miles. So if you're flying internationally, that makes a ton of sense. You can just get extra miles. The other thing is if your company's paying for it, like sometimes Brian gets his travel covered, your company will pay for the miles pretty much. So that's something cool to look for. And beyond that, Brandon, I know you want to talk about this one. Go for it.
Well, there's another thing that is, he's seeing me like get more.
He's like frantically typing as he wants to talk about something else. I was like, yeah, good point.
So besides the frequent flyer programs, they also make a ton of money in a certain way. And that is through their partnerships with credit cards. I looked it up real quick. And actually, I love how Google does an AI overview now because they were losing out to ChatGPT real bad. And I was like, oh, there's no reason to go to Google ever again.
Exactly.
And then they came up with this. So thank goodness they did. So credit card partnerships are a major source of revenue for airlines. When I say major, I mean major.
Wow.
In 2023, Delta received $6.8 billion from its co-branded credit card partnership from American Express.
Read the sentence below that.
In 2019, 30% of Delta's total revenue came from co-branded credit card relationship.
That's insane.
So you think they care? There's a reason why they ask you at the end of the flight, hey, do you want to sign up for a credit card? Get the American Express SkyMiles card today. Yeah, of course, because they make that much money. American, 2023, $5.2 billion. And that's through Barclays and Citigroup. United, 2023, $3.2 billion. Southwest, $2 billion. Alaska, $648 million. JetBlue, which I'm a big fan of, but they're a smaller airline, $400 million from credit card
partnerships. A smaller airline getting $400 million. Through credit card partners in a year. That's 1 year. That's insane. So yeah, no wonder they have money to operate.
And that was through the partnerships. They didn't have to manage that. That was just additional revenue stream for them. So remember when I said, either in this episode or the part one, that the majority of these airlines make a lot of money from secondary and tertiary revenue streams?
That makes sense.
There's a major one.
Yeah.
As much as 30% of their revenue came from one product that has nothing to do with their business model.
That's insane.
Crazy. So,
I mean, there's another way they make all that money too, and that's transporting goods. I mean, you know what all the pilots say about cargo is boxes don't complain.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, cargo is just pure profit, right? There's no extra amenities they have to offer cargo. There's no seat upgrades they have to offer cargo for free, right? There's nothing like that. It's just you're flying boxes. The bad part about that for pilots is they get a lot more money out of it, but they usually have terrible hours.
Oh, it's
to fly cargo. And you're flying nights and you're on the night shift for however long it is.
Or international.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Which sounds great, but I mean, imagine flying to Tokyo, dropping stuff off, sleeping for a day, getting off your time zone, going back to the airport and flying back home.
Yeah. I mean, you're sleeping when you're tired, I think, at that point.
Yeah, probably.
Which is kind of what you're doing.
I mean, kind
of. And you had international travel and a bunch of domestic travel. I was like, Brandon, when do you sleep? He's like, when I'm tired.
When I'm tired.
He's like, my body doesn't know what time zone I'm on. So yeah, for cargo pilots, I'm sure it's pretty similar.
That's probably why I wake up at 1:30 in the morning Pacific every night.
Yeah, Brandon, that's probably exactly why. Your body thinks it's, I can, you know, 5 a.m. on the East Coast where you're at right now, where you're pretty much from Florida.
and then I go drink some water and I go back to sleep and it's fine. But so some other ways, and we'll wrap it all up, are obviously those partnerships and alliances and advertising and other sponsorships like digital screen ads, sponsored content. You wouldn't believe how many sponsorships are in the airports that you don't even notice in different terminals.
Just like normal signage it just doesn't stand out.
Everywhere. And then there's also some revenue shares. And that's from partnerships and alliances like the One World Partnership and Star Alliance. You'll see that on some global airlines. And this is just because they have to book for each other. And it's kind of like I'm thinking from a finance world, like intercreditor agreements, which is really
interesting. Explain that to the common folk.
No, we'll get into that some other time.
So. No, but that kind of stuff, I mean, it has to happen to make all these flights work, right? You're booking a flight from LAX to New York City. You're trying to book a cheaper one. And you're like, okay, I'm going to have a layover. Turns out that layover ends up being on a whole different airline or from a different company. And that's the way you find out, oh, that's how alliances work, is like Star Alliance or One World, is they kind of pick up flights for each other and pick up each other's passengers. So it's just weird how that stuff works and they make money from it.
Exactly. I mean, there's other things you wouldn't even think of. Like if you are at an airport and let's just say you're a big hub for American, right? So they are really only going to repair their airplanes, right?
Sure.
Well, what happens if another airplane, like a 737, has a major issue they can't fix? Well, now they're going to have to fix it for that other airline. And that's another revenue source for them.
I never thought about what happens. I figured, you know, it was like when something happened at the flight school, you'd fly the mechanic up.
I mean, sometimes you fly the mechanic
up. I'm sure that sometimes that can happen.
Or you use the mechanic where you're at.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I mean, there's already someone on the field that does it.
Yeah.
He has experience with 737s.
You probably already have an agreement in place to be able to deal with it.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure it's a mutual thing where if something happens at my home airport, you know, I'll fix your plane too.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Right.
And they charge each other some set fee or something.
Sure.
But then even like Wi-Fi entertainment services, I mean,
I've always paid for the Wi-Fi.
I pay for the Wi-Fi every time. I don't care if it's $15 or $50. I get more work done with the Wi-Fi. Yeah. So I pay for it for my phone and for my computer every single time, just so I can manage my work. Now, if it's in the middle of the night, I'm doing a red eye, I might not pay for it. But more and more places are going to offer that for free. And if you're watching me on video, I'm doing air quotes free, because they just build the cost in.
Yeah,
now everybody's paying for it.
You know, there's a couple things, though, that when you do book, they will sometimes show you exactly what the fee breakdown is. And you'll see like auxiliary services or something like that. Hmm. And that's those fees.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's weird.
All right, guys. So we got a couple questions for you as well. So make sure you comment below. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can comment below. If not, send us an email and we'll tell you about our emails in a minute. So one, do you think the airline should focus more on the premium services or affordable options for greater profit? What's kind of your opinion on this? I mean, we've talked about it at length today. I'm kind of curious what you think. So please let us know. And also,
if you could change one thing about an airline's pricing or services, what would it be? I have my opinions. Obviously, it's the seat comfort, but Brand has
don't nickel and dime me.
Yeah.
I don't like being nickel and dime.
No.
It's rude.
It's rude.
tell me how much it cost. Don't upcharge me later.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Everyone has their opinions and one man's dream is another's disappointment. So
quote by Brandon. If you've watched some of our previous episodes, please continue to like, follow, subscribe, really enjoy them. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails. It's Brandon@aviationmentors.com or Carson@aviationmentors.com for our wonderful producer, Mark. It is producer@aviationmentors.com. And like I said, don't forget to hit like, follow, stream, all of the things. We really appreciate it. Oh, and also subscribe.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Subscribe is either down here or up there. I'm not really sure anymore.
Somewhere around here.
Somewhere. Just make sure you click it, please. It's a huge part of helping us grow the podcast and really helping the aviation community grow.
Yeah, I appreciate it, everyone. As wrap up for the day, remember, I'm here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.